Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
As Indiana Jones returns to the theaters this weekend, so will the catchy soundtrack by John Williams. Are the concert halls next? This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. And later on today's show, live music from Italian composer and pianist Ludovico Einaudi, whose grandfather was the president of Italy. His music is familiar to both classical and film audiences around Europe. But we'll begin by looking at a new list of the top 300 classical albums of all time. It was assembled by the British radio station Classic FM, and on it you'll find your Mozart, your Beethoven, your Mahler, but you'll also encounter film scores like Gladiator and Pirates of the Caribbean. Now, this has stirred up a hornet's nest in the blogosphere as people wonder exactly what constitutes classical music and whether Classic FM is misleading its listeners. It is a topic that we will settle the only way we know how with our weekly
Soundcheck Smackdown.
And smacking the idea around of what to do with film music today, we have Tristan Jakob Hoff. He is a classical music writer and blogger for London's Guardian newspaper. He recently wrote about this trend and joins us on the phone from London. And joining us as well is John Maucheri, Chancellor of the North Carolina School of the Arts and for many years director of the Hollywood Bowl Orchestra. He's just returned from the Leipzig Gewandhaus Orchestra, where he led arrangements of Back to the Future and Close Encounters of the Third Kind, alongside the music of Wagner and Ravel. Tristan, that sounds like the kind of thing that you are actually writing against in your article for The Guardian. Does film music belong on a list of great classical albums or on a classical music concert? Tristan? All right, a little bit of a problem with Tristan. We'll get John in here.
Do I have to smack myself?
I guess you'll just have to go smacking
what
yourself.
What side
about
would you like me to take?
I'm told actually that we have found Tristan. Tristan, welcome.
Hi there.
Okay, so John has just gotten back from Leipzig, where he has paired several film scores with the music of Wagner and Ravel. It sounds from what you've written in The Guardian that does not work for you. Why?
Oh, okay. Well, it all depends, doesn't it? For me, it's really about what you're going to a concert hall to listen to. There are people who will go to a concert hall and really happily listen to film music, and those tend to be the people who are diehard fans of a particular film. Howard Shore with his Lord of the Rings symphony, classic example. He's managed to pick himself up a great audience based on people who love his film, or rather love Peter Jackson's film and love Howard Shore's soundtrack to that. For me, to go to a classical concert, I want to go there with a particular pair of ears on. I want to be listening to something in a very deep sort of almost a spiritual way. I want to have a connection with that music, but I just don't think it exists in film music generally.
All right, John, you have a response to that, I would assume.
I don't think film music is a genre. It's a delivery system, and there's many different kinds of music that appear in films, as there are ballets and every other kind of music. I think part of the problem is that because the amount of energy that creative people have has gone into film composition, that there's more of that music being created. Just the way in the 19th century there were lots of Italian operas, and we only capture maybe 30 or 40 of them. So there's a kind of complexity here that some of the music isn't very good, just like there are string symphonies and things that aren't very good. But the bottom line, as far as spirituality is concerned, see, I try to judge music by the way it sounds. And the concerts I did at the Gewandhaus, which included Ligeti's Atmospheres as well as Philip Glass's The Hours and began with the Prelude to Das Rheingold, was actually an exploration of time and space. What Tristan says about spirituality is that the last encore was Deborah's theme from Once Upon a Time in America by Ennio Morricone, and the audience was totally transfixed. And when it was over, the completely sold out, two sold out houses stood up and cheered. And it was a spiritual journey for them. So I don't think it's about whether it's film music or not. I think it has to do with whether it's good music or not.
Okay. Tristan, the idea that, you know, you go to a concert with, you said, a special set of ears on. I mean, most people go to a concert, they expect to hear an orchestra. If the composer is Mahler or John Williams, I mean, they're still hearing orchestral music. Isn't that worth something?
Well, it's an interesting distinction. For me, orchestral music does not equal classical music. And in the same way as classical music doesn't equal orchestral music, there is, I mean, some of the most amazing and moving music that's ever been written has been written for a solo piano or for a solo violin. You know, I don't think that the two, whether it's orchestral, equates to it being classical.
Mm-hmm.
For me, classical has a very it means something in and of itself. There's it's an aspirational quality that classical music has, to be an art form, to be something larger than itself, and to be able to engage listeners in a subjective approach and a subjective response to that music.
All right, now here are that's a good sort of summary of some of the criticism that's been leveled at film scores. John Malcheri, you know, the criticism includes the charge that soundtracks are syrupy and bombastic and manipulative. And
yeah, just like what people used to say Mahler symphonies were when they were first being played in the 60s. And you know, and one of the ironies is that when Mahler's symphonies became popular, which were about 1960, by the way, which was, as you might imagine and remember, the nadir of that moment when in classical music, where the only kind of music that was allowed to be played that was contemporary was an equal to serial music. And so suddenly there was this gigantic audience was suddenly discovering these symphonies that had been written at the beginning of the 20th century. And that's, I believe, and I remember telling this to Leonard Bernstein, is that actually the whole audience had grown up with the scores of Max Steiner, who had studied with Mahler, and so they were familiar with this kind of music. So when they heard the Papa, who was Mahler, they were actually in a very, very normal environment, because the actual line goes directly out of Mahler and Strauss to Korngold and Steiner and all those guys who actually studied with them or were their godchildren. And the only really difference, as I said, is the delivery system. Now, for example, I would ask Tristan if he accepts Mozart serenades or Bach cantatas or the Rosamunde Overture or Midsummer Night's Dream or Egmont of Beethoven as classical music. And I'm sure the answer is yes, but the bottom line is that music was definitely written not to be in a concert hall. I mean, they were all written for different reasons, but I mean, you can take great music that's intended to be played in a church during a Lutheran ceremony or to be underscoring for a performance of Shakespeare's Midsummer Night's Dream and play it in a concert if the music is good enough itself. So if you play Bernard Herrmann's Psycho,
right, well, let me,
it works.
You said you wanted to ask Tristan. Let's give him a chance to answer. Tristan,
yeah.
I mean, you know, there's been a lot of incidental music, dance music, ballet scores, you know, things that were written for their utility, you know, for a purpose. Mm. What does that do to their status as classical music?
Well, what I would say, first of all, is that the music that fits into that sort of utilitarian category that has nonetheless survived for 200 or 300 years is great music. It is music that transcends its original use. Look at the dance music of Johann Strauss II. It's absolutely 100% music that is written to be danced to. And yet, how often do we actually hear people or see people dancing to Johann Strauss these days? What we're actually, you know, we have these sold-out concerts at New Year every year in Vienna where people come along and they listen to Strauss. Now, there's got to be something intrinsic in that music that is worth listening to. And I think going back to your point about the delivery system, I think that film music, by its very nature, by the fact that it's attached to, let's say, a more dominant medium, which is the visual medium, I think that it tends to be, it tends to sideline the music. The music tends to be written almost to be ignored or very much much at least to underscore what's going on, you know, in a particular scene.
All right, we've been getting a number of comments from our Soundcheck listeners on the Soundcheck page of our website at WNYC.org. A listener who terms himself Grandpa Joe up in Westchester writes, "I think it's an unfortunate trend that orchestras must play movie music to try and pander to their audiences. Same goes for classical radio stations. Save it for the Pops concert." All right, so here's what I'd like to do. We've got four music examples, and we're just going to run through them real quick, see if you can figure out at home which of these is a film score and which is not. Here's number one. All right, and here is the second of our four so far anonymous examples. All right, example number three, film score or classical music? And our final example. Okay, so there are four examples of music that sort of you have to figure out which of those is a film score, which of those is a piece of quote-unquote genuine classical music. We're arguing the distinction between the two with Tristan Jakob Hoff from London's Guardian newspaper and with the conductor John Maucheri, both of whom I'm sure can identify all four of those pieces. So that's not where the fun lies. What we're going to do is we're going to play all four of them again, and this time I'm going to tell you what's what. And we'll begin with example number one, which is from Philip Glass, and this is, in fact, his acclaimed soundtrack to the film The Hours. And this is a film score by the great Russian composer Sergei Prokofiev. In fact, it's one of the great film scores of all time to the movie Alexander Nevsky. All right, and example number three, which is perhaps the most classical sounding of the bunch, is in fact John Williams and his soundtrack to the movie Schindler's List. And this, with its kind of boozy string orchestra sound, sounds like a soundtrack. It is, in fact, Rocky III. And I don't mean the film. I mean the Rachmaninoff Piano Concerto No. 3. All right, so there are our four examples. Tristan, let me throw it back to you because, you know, the idea that Prokofiev, Shostakovich, Sir Edward Elgar, Aaron Copland, Virgil Thompson, that these, you know, undeniable classical music giants wrote film scores seems to me like that might poke an awfully big hole in the argument against film music as classical music.
It's certainly a very good point, and I'm very glad that you played a bit of Alexander Nevsky there because it's a piece I love very much and respect as a great piece of classical music, despite the fact that it started life as a film score. But it's interesting. Alexander Nevsky, for me, it's the exception that proves the rule. It's such an obvious example of a great film score that's often heard in concert because it was arranged by Prokofiev for into a suite, which is about 35 minutes long. But it's actually a piece of music which was carefully worked on not only by Prokofiev, but by Eisenstein, who made the film, who actually edited his film and the very classic Battle on the Ice section the music that Prokofiev had written.
So there's
a real artistic dialogue going on there between the filmmaker and the composer, and I don't think that's generally the case.
Okay, so when you were saying before that film music is almost meant not to be heard, that very much not the case with Eisenstein's Alexander Nevsky, which is a largely silent film. John, I feel obliged to poke a hole in your argument as well, and that is the idea that film music is written under such tight deadlines, with such amazing constraints, and often in a kind of assembly line fashion. How do you produce classic music under those conditions?
Well, why don't you ask Johann Sebastian Bach how he got those cantatas out every Sunday? I mean, he had the same problem, didn't he?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the geniuses produce films at different speeds. Beethoven took 10 years to write the first movement of his Fifth Symphony, but Mozart would just sit down and write something. So I think that here's where the issue is. The various criteria that you can use against film music, if you took the same criteria and used it against, as it were, classical music, half the classical music pieces you love would fall out of the canon. I think it's about listening to the music. And I think also I'm telling you, it's not that all film music is good or all film music is bad. It just, some of it is really wonderful, and it's in all different kinds of styles. It's atonal. You know, one of the things I played at Gewandhaus was Planet of the Apes of Jerry Goldsmith, 1971, a totally atonal film score.
Right.
If you called it Opus 4, you could play it in a contemporary concert.
And nobody would listen to it.
That's exactly right. If you call it Planet of the Apes, it's a pops piece. It's the same notes.
As our listener Tom, writing from the Upper West Side, says, didn't Haydn say all music is good, but the boring kind? And I think we'll leave it there. John Malcheri has joined us from the studios of a sister station in North Carolina, Tristan Yakupov.
Winston-Salem.
All right. Tristan's been with us on the phone from London, where he writes for the Guardian newspaper. To the two of you, thanks for being part of our Soundcheck Smackdown this week. Thanks very much.
Thanks, John. Bye now.
And in the background, a little bit of music from the Oscar-winning score to the film Atonement. This music by Dario Marianelli, the most classical sounding of the five scores that were nominated for this year's Academy Award. Coming up, we return to exploring the film music classical divide, sort of, when we meet with Italian superstar Ludovico Einaudi. Also, it's your last day to weigh in on Soundcheck's online poll. Tell us where you buy your music and how much you pay, and do it on the homepage at WNYC.org. We'll have the results for you on Thursday on Soundcheck.